KBCS is powered by listeners just like you. Support this and other KBCS stories, interviews, and highlights by donating at our website, kbcs.fm. You're listening to The Grit on 91.3 KBCS Community Radio for over 50 years. Next, the Seattle area has a particularly distinctive feminist history. Dr. Barbara Winslow, Professor Emerita at Brooklyn College and author of Shirley Chisholm, Catalyst for Change, came out with a new book last year, Revolutionary Feminists, the Women's Liberation Movement in Seattle.
No one knows about Seattle. And to me, this is extraordinary because we were the first state to have a popular referendum to liberalize abortion laws in the world. The first rape crisis clinic was organized in Seattle, the first battered woman shelter. We had probably the largest expansion of anti-racist, feminist-controlled reproductive clinics anywhere, even in greater than in New York, and no one knows about it. What I mean by the revolutionary feminism and the revolutionary feminists is that we were feminists, but we wanted to basically destroy gendered and racial patriarchy. We wanted to liberate women and men and children and older folks and everybody from the chains of capitalist society. So that's why I use the term revolutionary feminists or the left of the women's movement, not just the women's movement. But for example, the women's movement is always characterized as all white, and that wasn't true. White women were in it, but women of color in Seattle played foundational roles in the revolutionary feminist movement. And what makes this even more remarkable is when I moved to Seattle in 1967, it was a city that was 94% white. The University of Washington had over 35,000 students. It is believed 100 were African-American and maybe 100 were Latinx. So it was whiter than white, and they had no statistics on indigenous or AAPI students. So the fact that women of color played such important roles in these early years.
So tell me what was going on at the time.
In the 50s, there was a horrible period of McCarthyism, and Washington State had their own House Un-American Activities Committee. People lost their jobs. People died by suicide. Seattle had these small revolutionary sects, S-E-C-T-S. And one of them was a pretty remarkable, except very sectarian sect, called the Freedom Socialist Party. And two of the women in it were very committed feminists. And they were the ones who more or less said, we're going to found a women's group. And they also wanted to found a women's liberation group because they wanted to reach the younger women like myself. There was another woman named Susan Stern, Judah Shapiro, and so forth, all of us. So they founded Seattle Radical Women. Is the National Organization for Women doesn't come into Seattle until 1970. So we had 3 years to form groups and basically to develop specific agendas and things we wanted to do. But one of the women who joined Radical Women was a woman named Nina Harding, who was African-American, and she played a very leading role in the women's liberation movement in Seattle in this period. And the first thing we focused on was daycare. And we get accused of, you know, we were young people, we didn't like children, we didn't like mothers, we didn't like housewives, but yet the first thing we did was fight for daycare. And this is also very important because the overwhelming majority of us did not have children. So why would someone like me, I'm 23 or 4, be very committed to the issue of childcare? And here's where radical politics came in, because both progressive to left, you know, Marxist politics always argued that there could be no emancipation for women unless the family was restructured so that women would be free from the sole responsibility of raising the children and nurturing the husband. So the child care came first. Now, the second was around, today we call it reproductive justice, but in the late 60s and 70s, we called it abortion rights. Abortion was illegal in Washington state, as it was throughout the country. But beginning in the mid-60s, there was a real push to liberalize abortion laws. First of all, the number of women who had abortions illegally, who died from illegal abortions, who remained unable to have children as a result of botched abortions was increasing because more and more women were entering the paid labor force. And in order to get the jobs you wanted, you had to be able to graduate from high school, from college, and you had to be able to control your fertility to be able to determine the circumstances of your employment and so forth. And it became a major issue across the country. But for the most part, the abortion movement was led by middle-class doctors, psychiatrists, counselors, and so forth. And in Washington state, they wanted to introduce it under the radar in Olympia, Washington. And Clara Fraser, who was the indisputed leader of radical women. She worked for the Seattle Opportunities Industrial Commission. She convinced her boss that this bill in Olympia should be supported, and they rented buses. And there were 1,500 of us, overwhelmingly women of color, Black women, who went to Olympia. And we had what I called creative lobbying. That is, we sat in an all-white members of the House of Representatives in Olympia, and they tended to be not only white, but extraordinarily conservative. They were terrified of us. They had never been surrounded by women, especially women of color. They had never been challenged, and they sound like some of the congressmen today. And another man stood up and said, "Women are not smart enough to make decisions." And I remember Jill Severin heckled back, "Neither are most congressmen." I mean, they had never been challenged. And because we had this huge demonstration, abortion rights got on the front page of the Seattle PI, the Seattle Times, and we forced the issue. We convinced the more mainstream groups to have a referendum on abortion. You know, a lot of us were graduate students, and we did our research, and we found out that one out of every four women in Washington state had had an illegal abortion. So we believed we could win. And we went door to door. We did everything. A group of us gutsy women leafleted the UW football games around abortion rights. I spoke at a Veterans of Foreign Wars. I spoke to the Women's Auxiliary of the Seattle Symphony Orchestra. They had things like that in those days. Our group, Women's Liberation Seattle, organized a meeting where Fannie Lou Hamer, the legendary African American civil rights leader, Black freedom struggle leader, Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, we wanted her to come up and speak. And she came up in 1969. And our group decided that I should speak with Mrs. Hamer, as we called her. Looking back, I should have just said, "Just a minute, folks. The whole meeting is about Mrs. Hamer. I don't even deserve to stand next to her, given her incredible courage," but they said I had to. So I spoke for 15 minutes about the abortion referendum. And then Mrs. Hamer looked at me and she said, "This was very interesting." She said, "I always thought I was against abortion." And then she tells the story. She was trying to get people to vote. She gets arrested. She gets thrown in jail. She gets beaten senseless. They send her to a hospital. She comes out of the hospital and she found out she had been sterilized. The entire audience, which was overwhelmingly white, we all gasped. I was a white, middle-class, young woman. I had never heard of coercive sterilization, a practice so common in Mississippi, it was called the Mississippi appendectomy. And then, after the abortion referendum passed, one of our members came to our group. She already had a child. She was working class. She was at Seattle Central Community College. She was studying to be a mechanical engineer. She found out she was pregnant. And she went to Harborview Hospital to terminate a pregnancy. And the doctors said they would do it only if she agreed to be sterilized. She could not afford to have a child. So she agreed to the sterilization. She came back to our women's group and she told us she felt she had been raped. Members of our women's group went to Harborview. We interviewed the head and they very cavalierly said, yes, she was in no condition to take care of herself. So she had to be sterilized. And it was at that moment that our women's liberation group began to tie the issue of abortion to sterilization and to begin to understand the language that we now use in terms of reproductive justice. Women must have the right to have children, to keep their children, just as women have the right to determine the circumstances under which they would give birth. From that moment on, all the women's groups took up the issue of coercive sterilization. And after the referendum passed, there were clinics set up throughout the city of Seattle, many of which dealt with a wide range of issues dealing with women, sexuality, childbirth, sterilization, both voluntary and involuntary, breastfeeding, contraception, and all forms of sexuality. The Aradia Clinic bought sex toys so women could explore their sexuality, and they couldn't get enough of them. So they had to go to all the porn stores to get all the sex toys so that women could learn to, you know, discover their sexuality. We performed gynecological exams on each other, and some of the women in the groups, they went to the UW hospital and they asked if they could sit in on autopsies of women so that they could really see, you know, the totality of women's reproductive organs. And many of them ended up teaching the male doctors how to perform abortions. So, I mean, this is a story that we have to know about.
That was Dr. Barbara Winslow, Professor Emerita at Brooklyn College. Dr. Winslow will be in Seattle on March 28th at the University of Washington Library.